Welcome back, everybody, to the Deep Dive. This time, we're going to kind of take a trip back in time, back to 1966.
Oh, wow.
Alabama.
Okay.
We're going to be looking at the case of Edward Boykin.
Interesting.
Who was a 27-year-old black man facing 5 robbery charges. And each of those charges carried a potential death sentence.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, pretty high stakes here.
Yeah.
And the case... you know, went to the Supreme Court, Boykin v. Alabama. Yep. And it really shaped how we think about guilty pleas to this day.
I see.
So, you know, imagine yourself in that position. You're Edward Boykin. Yeah. You're in this very racially charged environment.
Yep.
And you just plead guilty.
Right, right.
So that's kind of the heart of what we're looking at today. What does that mean? What are the implications of that?
Yeah, and what's interesting about Boykin v. Alabama is that the court record is almost silent on whether Boykin actually understood how serious his plea was.
Right.
You know, like, did he know that he was waiving his right to even have a trial at all? Or that he was giving up a chance to confront his accusers, to present a defense, to even remain silent?
Yeah, it really feels like this kind of like... a gap in the legal record.
It does, yeah.
And it just raises all these questions about, like, what actually went down during the proceedings.
Absolutely.
So I guess to kind of get into this, let's talk about those rights that Boykin may have waived. I mean, these are pretty fundamental, right?
Yeah.
To our legal system.
Yeah, they're really the core, the bedrock. We're talking about, like, constitutional protections here.
Right.
The Fifth and Sixth Amendments.
Right.
You know, probably everyone listening knows the Fifth Amendment, it protects against self-incrimination, which, you know, means Boykin could have just stayed silent and not testified against himself. And then the Sixth Amendment, that's where we get the right to a jury trial.
Right.
Where, you know, your fate is decided by people from your community.
Right. Because you're a jury of your peers.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they have to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And there's another one, too. Right.
Yeah.
The Confrontation Clause.
Yes.
And that's such a huge part of due process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that means that you, as a defendant, get to confront your accusers.
Right.
In court.
Face to face.
Yeah, you can challenge their testimony. You can present your side of what happened. These aren't just, you know, legal loopholes.
Right.
These are the foundations of a fair trial.
Totally agree. And in Boykin's case, you know, there's this lack of clarity about his plea.
Yeah.
And it created a situation where these super important rights were potentially lost without any clear sign that he even knew what he was giving up. And that's part of what really bothered the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And led to this huge decision that changed, like, how we view guilty pleas in general.
So the Supreme Court steps in and takes a look at this case.
Yeah.
And what happens? What do they decide?
Well, ultimately, they overturned his conviction.
Okay.
And Justice Douglas, he wrote the majority opinion. And he made this really important point. He said a guilty plea can't be truly voluntary.
Aye.
Unless there's a clear sign, you know, an obvious demonstration that the defendant really understood the rights that they were giving up.
Yeah.
And Justice Douglas was really worried about the possibility of, you know, coercion or misunderstanding.
Right.
Especially, you know, with defendants who are already in a tough spot.
Yeah.
Maybe they're facing a lot of pressure.
Especially, you know, given the context, right? I mean, we're talking about a black man.
Absolutely.
In 1960s Alabama.
Yeah, that context is huge.
Facing a potential death sentence.
Exactly. So you can see why the court was sensitive to that power imbalance.
Yeah.
You know, between the state and someone facing those kinds of charges.
Right.
So a silent record could easily be hiding, like, subtle forms of coercion or just a genuine lack of understanding.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to tell.
Exactly.
Just by looking at the record.
And that would make it almost impossible to challenge a conviction later on. So with the Boykin ruling, the court was really trying to put some safeguards in place.
Okay.
To protect defendants' rights during that whole plea process.
I see.
Make things more transparent.
So it sounds like Justice Douglas was basically saying, you know, it's not enough to just say guilty.
Right. Yeah.
The record has to actively show.
I have to prove it.
Yeah. That the defendant understands what they're actually doing. It's not just a, you know, a formality.
It's a conscious choice, a real decision.
Yeah.
Not just going through the motions.
And Boykin, this case, forced the system to deal with that problem head on.
It did.
But I imagine there were dissenting voices on the court.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, this seems like a pretty big change to how people thought about guilty pleas.
Yeah, there were absolutely dissenting voices. Justice Harlan, for example.
Okay.
He wrote a really interesting dissent. His main concern was what he saw as federal overreach, you know, interfering with how state courts run things.
Right.
He thought states should be able to manage their own systems, their own legal processes,
right,
without the feds stepping in.
Okay, so he's arguing for kind of a clearer separation of powers.
Exactly.
Between the federal government,
yeah,
and the individual states.
Yep, that classic debate.
Yeah, something that, you know, keeps coming up throughout history.
Constantly.
But what else did Justice Harlan say?
Well, he was also worried that the Boykin ruling could lead to a ton of appeals.
Oh, interesting.
You know, people appealing their cases based on just, like, technicalities.
Okay.
Rather than actual claims of being forced into a plea or being treated unfairly.
Right.
Which, you know, he thought could overwhelm the courts.
Yeah.
And slow down the whole justice system.
Yeah. It's interesting how one single case can lead to, you know, all these bigger debates.
It is fascinating.
About, like, fundamental legal ideas and even, like, philosophical questions.
Absolutely.
And we're going to look at those ideas a little bit deeper after a quick break.
Sounds good.
Stay with us.
You know, it's important to remember that Boykin v. Alabama didn't just come out of nowhere.
Right.
It was part of a larger trend of legal decisions in the 1960s.
Okay.
That were really focused on expanding the rights of people accused of crimes.
So it was like a product of its time.
Exactly.
Reflecting that growing emphasis on individual rights.
Yes.
And due process, especially in the criminal justice system.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Warren Court was really key in this shift.
Yeah.
You know, they're famous for those landmark rulings.
Right.
Expanding constitutional protections.
Right.
You know, think about cases like Miranda.
Right. Miranda rights.
Yeah. Miranda v. Arizona, which made it so police have to tell suspects about their right to remain silent.
Right.
Or Gideon v. Wainwright.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteeing lawyers for defendants who can't afford them.
Right. Right.
So these cases, along with Boykin, they really show this effort to ensure that everyone, even the most vulnerable people,
right,
have a chance at a fair legal process.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It kind of puts Boykin in this broader context of this movement toward a more just legal system.
Yeah.
But how did Boykin actually change how courts work in practice?
Right.
We talked about plea colloquies earlier.
Oh, yes.
What do those actually look like? Like,
yeah,
if you're in the courtroom.
Yeah. Okay. So picture this. You're a judge.
Okay.
And you're handling a case where the defendant's about to plead guilty.
Mm-hmm.
The plea colloquy, that's this crucial moment.
Okay.
Where you have to figure out if they're really making this decision freely.
Right.
And if they truly understand what it means. It's where the ideas from Boykin, like, actually play out in the courtroom.
So it's not just about checking boxes on a form.
No, not at all.
The judge has to really talk to the defendant.
Yeah, engage with them.
Yeah, figure out if they understand, make sure they're not being pressured or coerced.
Exactly. It's a big responsibility.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So what kind of questions does a judge ask,
right,
during a plea colloquy?
Sure. I mean, the questions can change a bit.
Okay.
Depending on where you are, what the charges are.
Right, right.
But there are some common things they'll ask.
Right.
Like, they'll want to confirm that the defendant gets what they're being charged with,
mm-hmm,
what the possible punishments are.
Right.
And the rights they're giving up by pleading guilty.
Oh.
They'll also ask if they've had enough time to talk to their lawyer,
mm-hmm,
if anyone's threatened them.
Right.
And if they understand that the plea agreement is, like, set in stone.
So it's almost like a mini trial.
Yeah, kind of.
To make sure the defendant is really in the loop.
Exactly. But even with all that, even with these safeguards.
Yeah.
Couldn't there still be times when plea bargains are unfair?
Well,
or when someone feels pressured?
Yeah. Especially because the system is so overloaded.
Yeah.
And there's this push to close cases quickly.
Mm, that's a really good point. And you've touched on this tension in the whole plea bargain system. Even,
yeah,
with Boykin and these plea colloquies.
Yeah.
These pressures can make it really hard to guarantee that someone's truly choosing to plead guilty.
So what kind of pressures are we talking about?
Well, put yourself in the defendant's shoes.
Okay.
You're facing a serious charge,
mm-hmm,
maybe years in prison.
Right.
Your public defender, who's swamped with cases,
yeah,
advises you to take a plea deal.
Okay.
Even though you say you're innocent.
Right.
Because the deal means a shorter sentence.
Okay.
But going to trial,
yeah,
that's a long and uncertain process.
Right.
It costs a lot of money. to mount a good defense.
Yeah.
So all those things, they create this huge pressure
right.
to just yeah. accept the plea.
Even if you didn't do it.
Even if you didn't do it, yeah. It's tough.
That's like a catch-22.
It is.
You want to believe the system is fair.
Right.
But you also see how these real-world pressures can make innocent people feel like they have to plead guilty.
And that's the core of the whole debate about plea bargains.
Right.
On the one hand, they're essential for managing all the cases in the courts.
Right.
They help avoid these super long, expensive trials.
Yeah.
And they can give defendants a chance at a lighter sentence.
Right.
But on the other hand, you have this power imbalance between the state and the defendant
yeah.
and these systemic pressures.
Yeah.
And it raises serious questions about whether plea bargains are actually just...
So how do we balance that?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right.
Is there a way to make plea bargains fairer without making the system grind to a halt?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
It seems like a really complicated problem.
It is. But there are some ideas for reform out there.
Okay.
Some people say we should limit plea bargains.
Okay.
Especially for serious charges.
Mm-hmm.
So people aren't pressured to give up their right to a trial.
Right.
Others say we need to give public defenders more resources.
So they can represent their clients better and really push back against these coercive plea deals.
Yeah.
And then there's the idea of changing sentencing guidelines.
Okay.
So the difference between a plea bargain sentence and a trial sentence is smaller.
Right.
That way, people wouldn't feel like they have to plead guilty just to avoid a harsher punishment.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Those all seem like good things to look into.
Yeah, definitely.
Are there any like specific organizations or resources that you would recommend?
Oh, yeah.
For our listeners who want to learn more about this?
Absolutely.
Or maybe even get involved in advocating for some of these changes.
Yeah, for sure. So there's the Innocence Project.
Right.
They work to exonerate people who were wrongly convicted.
Right.
And a lot of those people, they accepted plea deals under pressure.
Oh, wow.
So they really highlight how this focus on efficiency can sometimes come at the cost of justice.
How powerful.
And then there's the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. They're great. They advocate for policies that protect due process.
Right.
And make sure everyone has fair representation.
It sounds like staying informed and getting involved is really important.
It is.
Edward Boykin's story.
Yeah.
And the Boykin ruling, they remind us that we can't just assume the system is fair.
We can't be passive.
We have to be active, to question things, to speak up.
To hold the system accountable.
Yeah, and to hold it to its own ideals.
Exactly.
Boykin shows us that even systems with good intentions.
Yeah.
Can lead to injustice if we're not paying attention.
If we become complacent, yeah.
You know, it's amazing how Boykin v. Alabama, a case from, over 50 years ago?
Yeah.
It still feels so relevant.
It really does.
To what's going on in the legal system today.
I think it's because it speaks to something really fundamental.
Got
like, Boykin reminds us that even a record that seems quiet, you know, no big statements.
Right.
It can still point to a possible injustice.
Right.
Just the fact that there's no clear evidence. Right.
That a defendant understood their rights.
Yeah.
That should never be ignored.
Right.
It should be a huge red flag.
Yeah. It makes you wonder how many people, especially back then.
Right.
When, you know, legal help for poor people wasn't always great.
Yeah. How many people just pleaded guilty without really knowing what they were doing?
Right. How many Edward Boykins were there?
It's a serious question.
Yeah. It really underscores how important it is for everyone to have good legal representation.
Absolutely.
No matter how much money they have.
No matter their background. Yeah.
Because without that, I mean, the protections from Boykin?
Yeah.
They don't really mean much.
They can't really work.
So it's not enough to just have the rules, right?
No, it's about access.
We have to make sure everyone can actually use the system, understand their rights, and make informed decisions.
And feel empowered to do so.
Yeah.
Justice isn't just about following the rules.
Right.
It's about making sure everyone has a real chance to be heard.
To understand what's happening and to make choices about their own future.
And that means we can't just sit back and assume everything's fine.
No.
We have to keep questioning things, pushing for change.
Holding the system accountable.
Yeah, even when it looks like it's working.
Appearances can be deceiving.
Boykin v. Alabama is a good example of that.
For sure.
Even well-intentioned systems can be unfair if we're not careful.
And Boykin's legacy, you know, it's still playing out.
Yeah.
As the system grapples with mass incarceration.
Right.
Racial disparities, the reliance on plea bargains.
Yeah.
Those questions from Boykin.
Mm-hmm. They might be even more relevant today than they were back then.
Absolutely. So what can we do?
Right. It can feel overwhelming. Like, what can one person do?
Yeah, well, first, just being aware is huge.
Okay.
Understanding how plea bargains work,
Yeah.
the pressures defendants face, the potential for things to go wrong, that's a start.
Right.
And then support those organizations fighting for change, like push for better funding for public defenders.
Yeah.
So everyone has good legal representation and talk about these issues with
Right.
your friends, your family, your community.
Yeah, because every voice matters.
It does. Every action adds up.
So by remembering Edward Boykin
Yes.
and this case, Boykin v. Alabama, maybe we can work together to build a legal system that's truly just
That's the goal.
for
A
everything.
system that lives up to those ideals of due process.
Right.
Fairness, equal protection for all.
Well said. And that wraps up our deep dive into Boykin v. Alabama.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. We hope this gave you some new insights into this important case
Yeah.
and its impact.
It's a fascinating one.
Remember, the pursuit of justice never ends.
It's a journey.
It takes all of us working together
To make things better.
to make sure justice is a reality for everyone.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.